Welcome to episode 37 of Nui Tech People. Today we've got Andrew McCullum. Andrew's had a lot of success in technology, including a successful exit from his time in Sydney. Andrew and I talk all things technology, teams, building culture, as well as what he's currently working on as CTO of Compete Nutrition. I hope you enjoy this episode. Episode 37, Nui Tech People. Today we have Andrew McCullum. Welcome, Andrew.
Thanks, mate. Thanks, James.
Mate, you've been around Newcastle Tech scene for quite a while in various facets, different roles, mentorships, different success stories. But for those that don't know you, give us a quick overview. Who are you?
At the moment I'm working as CTO for Compete Nutrition, also helping a few other projects get up off the ground. My background's in tech startups primarily. Most of my working time's been in Sydney, but spending more and more time in Newcastle over the last 3 years, really.
Nice.
Enjoying it.
Mate, if you wind it back, the Sydney Times, I know you've had a bit of success down there in the tech scene. Give people that don't know you a bit of an overview. I think you'd be one of a very small number of people based in Newcastle who've had some success in the tech scene, or a successful exit in particular. Mate, give us a quick overview. What's happened today?
Yeah, sure. I guess firstly, my first sort of foray into innovation came when I was at CabCharge.
Yeah.
And I was given the freedom to go and create what was certainly Australia's first mobile taxi booking application. Yeah, as far as we know, probably the world's first actually. But that was, and then from there, worked in, lived the agency life in Sydney, did some agency stuff, and then into startups. So I helped create, 2009, 2010, I think we won Best App at CBIT, created a digital foundry, a venture studio effectively, and fund. Created a few startups out of that. One of them was we listed on the ASX, so we had the second best IPO of 2015. Got out of all those businesses inside the last few years.
Nice.
Exited Sydney and spending less time on the train and more time up here.
Very nice. Very nice. I think it's a story of a lot of people, right? You've had some success. More family orientated now. Up in Newcastle, yep. A little bit more time with family, a little bit more time in the surf.
Yeah, definitely. It's way more relaxed. I love Sydney. Sydney's a great place, but there's nowhere I'd rather have the family than Newcastle.
Yeah.
School's good. Schools are good. Yeah, kids are happy. It doesn't take much to get to the beach. Spend quite a bit of time at the beach.
Mate, on that note, you did like to spend a bit of time in the surf. You do like to train quite a lot. You've done a couple of Ironmans. Mate, you're a big push that work-life balance. I know you like to, for people that in your teams, to have that proper balance, get some training in or get some time to spend with the family. I wouldn't say it's against the grain because there are more companies coming on board with that, but where have your experiences come from in, really driving that balance?
I guess, like many people, I've probably been, probably definitely been guilty of pushing the envelope a bit too far and working too hard. I spent far too many hours working and not enough time with family as a younger dad. Really trying to change it at the moment. They've done a few other sort of one of the other things that's been, I guess, a bit of an eye opener for me is what got me into or sort of back into surfing as an adult is the Waves for Wellness program. So it's a program created by a local guy, Joel, and he's getting quite a lot of traction at the moment. Runs in Sydney, runs in Newcastle, I think up on Gold Coast or Sunshine Coast as well. So that was very much about, taking a little bit of time for yourself, using that time in the surf just to make sure, you're not stressing about anything else. And when you're sitting out there in the surf, all you're worrying about is, what the next wave's doing. You're not worrying about, should you have made a phone call or what emails haven't responded to, or, how are you going to pay the next paycheck or whatever it happens to be. So for me, the focus for me and, for my teams is always then, you need to be for your own sake and for everyone's sake, you need to be, you know, a whole person. You need to be a good person. And that means, you know, not just effective at work, but effective in your life. There's no point burning out and, you know, going too hard and then not being able to back it up next year or the year after. And for everyone, that's different. You know, for me, yeah, I do like to challenge myself and push myself. I've probably never trained as much as I should for triathlons, but certainly do a bit of training for that. We're involved in surf and surf clubs and stuff, so that takes up a lot of time as well. But it is, yeah, very much takes some time to find that balance, work out who you are, and, you know, find a life where, you know, you're happy with your life, not just happy with your career.
Agreed, mate. Yeah, the work-life balance, right? There's that work becomes life for a lot of people, and there's no clear, you know, line down the middle. And a lot of people work, you take that home with you, whether you're actually doing it or not, it's in your mind. So it's about trying to find that balance and making sure you're actually enjoying it as well, right?
Yeah, I think that's, you've probably touched on the really on the core there for me, James. Like, it's, yeah, we talk about work-life balance. I don't look at it as work-life balance. There's not a work self and a home self, and it's really hard to have that distinction and draw that line. So if you can't be happy and whole with who you are in both places, and then it makes it really, really challenging, you know, to be effective in either place. So rather than, you know, drawing a line and saying, oh, look, you know, I'm not at work anymore, or I'm at work now, or anything like that, no, you know, if you can fit yourself and your life into, you know, home, into work, into everything, it's much easier, I believe, than trying to draw these lines and separate things.
I agree. And I think it's harder and harder to try to separate them anyway these days. It's not.
Well, you can't with social media. No. Everything's just connected.
Yeah. It's social media, and it's just telephones in general, right?
Yeah,
telephones,
yeah.
Watches, the lot, right? You're always connected. You're always accessible via, you know, from whoever, clients, yeah, that you're working with, or just employees. So you're always connected, and there's always an expectation that you are contactable, yeah, right? So if you can find that and you can find some enjoyment in that, I think it's a lot easier than trying to draw some form of imaginary line between the two.
Yeah. Well, you know, trying to get more and more away from using hours in the office as a metric for, you know, how effective you are.
Yeah.
So if, you know, if we're not drawing those lines, you know, if we're not using that as a metric, then, yeah, we need to be able to say, well, yeah, maybe these lines aren't strong, and that's fine. But, you know, it's then give and take. Like, you can't expect people to always be available and never look after themselves either.
I agree. So if we go to, and you actually turn that to practicality, how are you using that in your team at the moment? Are we talking flexible work hours? Are we talking working different days of the week, working from home? How are you practically, you know, doing that in your current environment?
Yeah, so we're actually going through a process at the moment of trying this 4-day work week, so breaking it up into two twos. So Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Friday. So giving people Wednesday completely, you know, to themselves. That way, you know, you come back in. The concept is, at any rate, it seems to work so far. You come back in on Thursday, reinvigorated, regenerated, ready to kick on. You know, and it means, again, sort of Friday, you don't get to sort of midday Friday and you go, oh, that's it, I've had enough, it's Friday, Arvo. It's still, okay, this is Friday, let's get stuff done. Having said that, I've always been a believer, and one of the core values I've tried to instill in a lot of places, a lot of sort of, you know, recent companies, has been, if you're not late for something, you're not late. And that sounds a bit like a throwaway line, I guess, but for me it means you don't need to, and you shouldn't need to be in the office at 8 every day or 9 every day or whatever. Yeah, you know, if you've got a commitment and you've made a meeting, then stick to it. Yeah, you know, I don't like people being late to anything they commit to. It's never been part of who I am, and it's not something that I appreciate. But having said that, I also don't expect people to be in the office at 8 o'clock for no reason or 9 o'clock for no reason. Yeah. If there's a meeting, make sure you're there. If you have jobs to do, make sure you do them.
Yeah.
But you know, why stress about times when everyone's got different commitments? You know, I drop the kids off to school at least 3 days a week. I pick them up and take them to sport, you know, multiple times a week as well. We can't have this sort of separation between work and life anymore. And the result of part of that is, you know, I'm quite happy to, you know, once the kids are in bed, put a little bit more time in if there's something that I need to get done. Yeah. If I do happen to have a weekend down, often I find myself sort of carried away with an idea and trying to pursue that, whether it's work or a new idea or whatever it happens to be. You know, it's not there. There's never this concept that, I'm not at work, I'm not on the clock, I'm not doing it.
Yeah, I completely agree. So tangibles, you're looking at that 4-day work week, which is it's starting to take off. There's some success stories internationally and both in Australia now.
Yeah, there's been a few articles over the last few years. Another one very recently about the very concept. I mean, up until a few months ago, I was very much in the bucket of, okay, well, 4-day work week sounds great. If you're going to do it, definitely make Friday the day off so everyone has a long weekend. But then, you know, you start to put it into practice, and the concept of splitting it up into two twos, I think, works really well.
No, I don't disagree at all. And it probably comes down to who your actual employees are, right? If they're motivated and everyone's, you know, striving for the common goal and everyone's all behind it and running in the same direction, you're not going to have to worry about, you know, productivity. They're going to get what they need to get done in those two twos than they would in a full five. So I think once again, we live in a different age where we're paying for output now, not just how many hours you're spending there. It's actually, what are you getting done? What are you delivering?
Yeah, is there value and how much value? And, you know, is there enough value for in that exchange? And part of it is also, you know, you give people then 4 days or two lots of 2 days, and you know, everyone knows there's no time to waste. You know, it's not that, you know, we stand around the water cooler having long conversations or, you know, and, you know, I mean, we still take time to have lunch together, which is a very important thing, always try and share that meal together. But, you know, also, yeah, it's not that we get to, say, get to 3 o'clock on Friday and it's, tool's down, time for a beer, which, you know, I mean, it's very agency life, that mentality. And it's, breaking away from that, I think, yeah, it gives people the flexibility.
And may also help in the building of your team, in attracting people to your team. I think Newcastle in general, extremely difficult to hire for quality tech talent at the moment. Once again, that's a point of difference that might help you appeal to some parts of the market.
Yeah, I mean, the talent pool is certainly very, very well drained at the moment. There's a lot of great companies hiring. I guess, yeah, for me and for my team and for us, it's if this is the company that we're building, this is the culture that we're building, and that appeals to someone, then that's a good thing. It means that we're getting the right people in.
Yep.
You know, if that doesn't appeal to somebody, then they're not the right fit for our team. Now, it's not to say we want everyone. Like, it's super important to me that there's all sorts of diversity in terms of, background and thought process and how you arrive at thoughts as well. You know, like the last group of people I want is a whole lot of people that, you know, look and think like me sitting around the table. Having said that, you know, you're building a culture. You do want everyone to be, you know, at least, in some manner have a similar views on what life should be like.
Yeah.
How to get there, how to do it, how to execute always should be very different. But, you know, what we're striving for in life, that's something I think that's important that people share.
Yeah, once again, I think that's breaking down the barrier between work and life, right? Yeah. I think you can't be a separate person or a completely separate person outside of work and then in life, like outside of work and then in work. So if you live your life one way outside of work, to completely flip that and be a different person at work is just, it doesn't work, right? It's inauthentic and it'll get tripped up sooner or later. So
yeah, and it's getting more and more challenging for, you know, people who, so, you know, a lot of people came from a world where that's the case and still live in a world where that's the case, where, you know, you can and maybe should have this difference between these two. And look, you know, if you go work in a busy city and then you go home to the suburbs, then it's very easy to have those two different sides and keep those two separate. But with more and more people having, you know, flexible arrangements, work from home, remote work, all of that, you can't do it anymore. I mean, when I first started doing some remote work way back when, I was guilty of trying to keep that distinction as well. So, you know, like I'd get dressed, I'd put my business pants on, I'd put my business shirt on, I'd go in the office, I'd close the door, and that was it. Like, and because there was this work-life separation, and at that point in my life anyway, like, you know, I needed that, and there was the expectation, I think, was probably that needed to happen as well. Whereas now, the more I look at, you know, effective teams, it's not that as a leader of a team or, you know, growing a team, I want to be able to reach people all the time or expect them to be responsive all the time. It's that I know that there is life outside of work, and you need to be able to access that and you know, perform there as well.
Yeah, I think it's significantly easier to teach somebody new skills than it is to try and change somebody's personality.
I don't think
you're going to change somebody's personality or who they are, and nor should you want to. But if you can hire the right person who has the right person or personality fit for the company, the tech skills, in this case, we're building tech teams, can be taught. As long as there's a base there, you know, there's obviously a continuum there, and you don't want to be jumping from a dev with no experience to the CTO, but there needs to be, you know, some core skills, but a lot of that can be learned, and that's significantly easier than trying to change somebody and who they are.
There's a discussion I was having with Dan just the other day, which was like, I don't care how much experience you have. I want people who can think and who can approach things, you know, with an open mind. Unfortunately, sometimes the reality of that is, you know, often that comes with experience. I don't want experience in a particular programming language. I don't really care how much experience you've got in a particular language. If you're open to learning, you're open to thinking, and, you know, you're the right fit for the team, then awesome, let's go.
Nice. So we're talking about this team of yours at the moment, a growing team, local Newcastle success story, on a growth trajectory, Compete Nutrition, mate. For those of the listeners who don't know of Compete, what does the company do? And then how long ago did you join? What's the plans going forward?
So Compete started out really as a way to provide extra tech, or to enable dietitians, and in particular sports, advanced sports dietitians, to work with athletes, with, you know, pro athletes, elite, semi-elite athletes and semi-pros, even where they weren't able to have regular face-to-face meetings, so in consultations, you know, and typically like in any field like that, you know, it's that, you know, if you have the ability to speak to them more regularly than the once a week appointment that you have, then you can be more efficient, more effective there. So that's kind of where Compete started. It's grown into a way to then expand the ability to deliver those services through a marketplace dynamic, so that we can connect advanced sports dietitians, regardless of where they are, with athletes, regardless of where they are. Now, I joined Compete in the second half of last year. I want to say October-ish. But September, October. And since then, part of the reason that I joined was because prior to that point, the focus then became, we can take the same capabilities, the capabilities that these advanced sports dietitians have, and we can deliver those to everyone from a health and wellness perspective. So we can help to improve lives, we can help to improve performance in life, whether that's athletic or academic or from a mental and emotional state. We can help to empower and improve those performance through making sure that there's a good nutritional base, that you have, the right type of energy and enough energy to access what you need to access. So our goal, our focus for now is, continuing to build out the tech to deliver that and to, scale our ability to deliver that so that we're not always saying to everybody, look, you have to be working with this dietitian. And our goal is not to have people working with dietitians forever. It's to help, it's to use the dietitians, one, to deliver the that top class, world class capability to the elite athletes, the pros and semi-pro athletes and everyone who really wants to maximize their performance, but also to really cut through a lot of the confusion that exists around in nutrition and help people understand what good nutrition looks like and how to make sure that your nutritional needs are met within your situation, whether it's as an individual or a family or an athlete or whatever. Yeah. So that, there's none of this sort of concern or stress about food. There's so much anxiety around food at the moment, People, who only eat, poached chicken and rice, or, whatever it happens to be. And if we can remove a lot of that anxiety and help people understand what a good nutritional base looks like, then we can really make a difference in people's lives and how effective they are.
Yeah, especially our nutritional advice with the ulterior motive. A lot of the diets and things out there are out there to sell, and they're to sell a particular thing, as opposed to the food pyramid, for example, was created to help drive industry, right? So to actually provide advice and genuine advice for the actual benefit of the end user it's not quite noble, actually.
There's also, so if you actually look at what what the nutritional needs are, like most of us far out, most of us exceed a lot of the nutritional, a lot of the intake of certain certain elements. And I mean, I'm not a dietitian, so I'm not going to get into all the bits and pieces, and I certainly don't want to give any wrong information, but the reality is if we're better at fueling ourselves with the fuel that we need, if we're better at eating what we need rather than what's in front of us and what's there, then we can also have a really positive impact on the world at large. We all eat way too much meat. I mean, there's a big push recently, to reducing our carbon footprint and the intake of meat. And the reality is, we don't need to be eating meat all the time. Most of us, at any rate. We eat way more protein than we need.
Yeah, I don't disagree. And I'm definitely part of said problem.
Oh, me too. And that's okay. It's not that. Not that we're trying to get everyone to, to go to some crazy diet or to, make drastic changes, just to understand what their needs are.
I agree. And when we talk from a tech perspective, you mentioned the word scale before. Mm-hmm. Obviously, Compete would still be considered a startup or a scale-up. There was an MVP to start with, and that has evolved. And now you're in that phase of really building that up.
Yep.
You've been involved in scalable tech before. What's the key challenge for you at this sort of period through a startup or a scale up?
So I prefer always to say startup.
Yeah.
Personally, I don't like the term scale up. I think it's a misnomer, and it gets people thinking about the wrong things. It's never that we should now just be thinking about scale in terms of tech, which is why I don't like the term scale up. you know, it's now how do we scale our service? How do we scale the offering? And you know, and part of that's tech and the underlying tech components and the infrastructure and architecture. But part of it as well is how do we take it to different markets? How do we make sure that, you know, at scale where we're not speaking to everybody personally, we can communicate the value that we're adding and help people on the journey towards, you know, a better life and better nutrition. So biggest challenges for me that I've seen at this point in a startup's life, culture and politics is a massive, massive one. Yeah. I've seen internally people kill companies. Not because they're trying to kill companies, just because the culture wasn't the right culture, the people weren't the right people for that time in that company's life. And the other thing is not actually knowing and paying attention to what the customers need and what the customers want. It can be very easy. There's a lot of confirmation bias that comes into early startups. Yeah, if you sell, say you're a B2B company and you sell to 5 corporates, you know, all of a sudden there's this reinforced belief that what you're doing, what you have, what you're selling and how you're selling it's correct. And for all you know, those 5 are the only 5 that are ever going to buy it.
Yeah.
So as soon as you stop listening to what's actually happening, as soon as you start to believe that we've just got to do more better,
yeah,
that's where, you know, that death spiral for companies often can begin. You know, I love the every day is day one mantra. You know, just because you've sold to, you know, 5 people or 500 people or 500,000 people doesn't mean you're going to sell to the next 500,000.
Yeah. Nice. And then on the flip side then, what's the, if you said had to say through your experiences and successes, some commonalities between the teams or companies that you've been involved with that have led to that success? Is there any key commonalities that you look for? You mentioned the word culture before. It's a big one. Anything outside of that?
I think whether you tie it up in terms of success, whether you tie it up in terms of culture or individual people, and you can explain a lot through passion and drive and dedication. But for me, where I've seen most success is where there is that real, I guess, push from everyone in the business to do some amazing things. And it can be quite, I guess, almost disrespectful about in terms of, you know, disrespecting incumbents in the industry in terms of how you try and accomplish that.
Yeah.
But where everyone has that really intense focus on trying to provide an amazing experience in solving the problem that's at hand, that's where startups are tremendously fun, and that's where, you know, success seems, in my experience, seems to come from. And then the challenge is, yeah, as you get bigger, as you scale, once you get past, you know, 20 people, past 50 people, how do you maintain that? You know, how, when everyone's not sitting together, when everyone doesn't know everyone anymore, and know them intimately, how do you continue to get that drive and that passion from people, and make sure that when people do have their own differences and own ideas on where to take things, that ultimately it comes back down to that customer. You know, we need to remove any sort of, you know, internal office politics about, you know, who's more senior or who believes they're better or whatever. You know, what's the customer need? What's the customer want? What's the problem you're solving? And is this actually solving it?
Yeah, that's the right answer, not who came up with said answer, right? It's like, yeah. Hey, if you're actually all pushing towards the actual right thing, not politics on who came up with said answer. Yeah. Or
And often the right thing's not easy to see. Often the right thing looks like the wrong thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's really hard. Like, particularly if you've got great people in the organization and you're continuing to sell, say it's B2B.
Yeah.
You've got great salespeople, you're continuing to sell. You can be doing the wrong thing. And if you're not getting retention, if you're getting a lot of customer attrition at the end of your 12-month contract or whatever, yeah, then you're almost guaranteed to be doing the wrong thing. But that wrong thing looks like the right thing because your salespeople are still out there selling.
Yeah. Yeah. Quite interesting. And a different way of approaching it. It's nice. Mate, where you're at, you're obviously the CTO now. Previous company you were involved with, Blockchain. big successful tech career. Let's go with big successful tech career. I'm sure there's plenty of people out there much younger in their careers much younger in their tech careers and would look at someone like yourself. How do I get there? You've learned blockchain along the way. You've learned skills to become a CTO along the way. I'm sure there's various different technologies you've picked up, throughout that journey. If you had to give some advice to people starting out that have, an interest in startups or an interest in tech or to grow a tech career, how would you go about it, or what advice would you give to people to grow?
Don't be afraid to make mistakes and break things. I think one of the biggest challenges we have in Australia is, we like to talk about how risk averse Australian investors are. Everyone in startups likes to, bemoan the investors. Oh, they won't invest. They want this valuation. They want to invest at a seed valuation, but they want Series A traction. But where everyone is just as guilty of being this risk averse. The reason we don't have more entrepreneurs and more people in tech is that, people are very happy, and safe in their lane, whatever that lane happens to be. If you want to do something and you want to make a difference, you have to not be afraid, because it's sensible to be afraid of the risk, but you've got to do it anyway.
It's a willingness to fail, I think.
Yeah,
it's not being afraid, because as you said, you're right to be afraid, but it's a willingness to do that and fail anyway, with the knowledge that it's not going to kill you, 99.99% of times. It'll hurt. It'll hurt your ego more than it'll hurt anything else. It might hurt your bank balance a little bit. Maybe there's an opportunity cost that you didn't take a job because you had a crack at a startup or something like that. Maybe there's some short term, but the lessons learned with that failure should net net come out ahead, I think.
Oh, and if you build on that, then that's where growth happens. It's same, it's the same as training. If you're doing physical training, and particularly for an endurance thing, at the end of a session, if it's a long session, your muscles will be hurting, and that's fine. You can let them hurt, and you can let them recover, and then you can go to another session. But you build muscle by training on damaged muscle. So if your legs are hurting,
It's breaking
because
it down.
Because of yesterday, then you don't not train today. Yeah. If you want to get better, you want to get stronger, you want to get faster, and it's like anything, like a career. You make a mistake, you don't just, if you want to really learn from it, then you need to get back up and learn from it and keep building and keep going. You said willingness to fail. I think it makes a lot of sense, that term. I don't look at it like that. Willingness seems a bit too close to a desire to me.
Yeah.
I have no desire ever to fail. I fail plenty. I rarely look at the idea of failure as a realistic option. I know it's there. There's a risk there, and I know what I'm giving up for whatever opportunity I'm taking on. But I'm not looking at failure as part of the equation.
Yeah,
I'm looking at the upside. I'm looking at the benefit of the success.
But you
it's
do
a
acknowledge
desire for success more than it's a willingness to fail.
Correct. But you acknowledge that is an element there, and it's a possibility.
Oh,
and
absolutely.
You still go forward with it anyway.
Yeah, absolutely.
I guess that's probably the angle I'm going at. Maybe the terminology wasn't right, but I think it's the acknowledgement that failure is an option.
Yeah.
Yes, it's not something I'm going to be going for.
And it's important to weigh that up. It's important to understand and not go in with blinkers on, not go in blinded, and think that, failure is not going to happen, because it will, and you'll get knocked to the ground, more times than you care to believe.
Yeah.
It's whether you let that understanding, direct your, or how much you let it direct your judgment and the outcomes.
Nice. So I guess where we're going with that, where we've come from that, your career has been built on a bunch of learning experiences. You have failed throughout that time, but the objective to get back up again, you've learned a lot through those lessons. If we talk educationally, you haven't done a degree. Was there you jumped into tech through like sysadmin type role, wasn't it?
Yeah. So, jumped in through sysadmin.
What's your thought process around, you know, A, getting into technology? Why did you make the decision to go that way? Let's start there and then go into your opinion.
That's an interesting story. So at school, I was always good at school in computers, in computer studies and things. And I never had any problems getting good marks at school. So anyway, I finished school and I went and did some things. I traveled, I worked in different places. And then it's kind of got to the point 18 months later where I realized I needed to do something. You know, Mum said, you've actually got to go and do something. You can't just keep, you know, playing piano and working in the ski fields and that sort of stuff. You've got to do something. It's like, oh, okay, well, yeah. And she mentioned, your cousin is doing like programming at TAFE. Maybe you should go and do something. And I was like, yeah, well, I guess it's a thing. And it was always easy. And so I fell into tech that way. I was going to go to uni and study astrophysics and pure maths and philosophy and all tremendously interesting, amazing things that I'm sure would have led me down to the path of getting a job at CSIRO or maybe nowhere else in the world. It was, which is why, you know, I ended up then not going to uni at that point in time.
Yeah.
I think what I want to see people get from education is an understanding of how to think. And in that, I mean, if you're sitting on the other side of the table with someone, you want to be able to think about what they're going through, what they're experiencing, what they want to achieve out of something, what their approach is and what their path might be. If you can understand other people's sides to the story, then you can make a more informed decision around what the best path forward is going to be. I do have a philosophical problem with people going through education to get a job, because I think that our jobs in part are changing so very quickly, have done over the last 20 years, 25 years, and will continue to do so. So if you're learning just to get a job without thinking about why, I think you're, you know, potentially backing yourself into a corner. I want to see people learn to think, I guess.
Yeah. Hey, it's not too dissimilar to a lot of answers I've had from people. I think the ability to think, the ability to learn are probably the two most commonalities. Good base understanding is probably another commonality to say, hey, you can get a good solid knowledge base of which you can build, but the key is to build upon that because, as you said, things change so quickly. But I think my opinion is definitely aligned with that, the ability to learn or the ability to think, as you put it. And I think university does a good job in helping push that and provide an opportunity to sort of further your skills in that area. Definitely not the be-all and end-all.
Yeah, see, I did, and I think it probably depends on the individual as well. So, you know, while I did no degree outside of school, I did go on later and do business admin with a view to doing an MBA. For me, and maybe it was the time in life that I was doing that, but that, yeah, like I guess I'm sure I learned more through that than I give it credit for. But I don't remember it as being a terribly enlightening time or period in my life.
Yeah.
And it was designed, you know, that course was definitely designed to have you think, to apply then that thinking. But even that, and maybe it was just me at that time in my life. But
No, I agree. And there's the time in life for everyone, right? I think. Different people at different stages and to get different things out of it. So outside of then, formal education, you can take it or leave it, depending on the individual. A lot of learning from mistakes, willingness to try. Outside of that, is there any other, you know, you've picked up blockchain, you've picked up new technology consistently. How do you pick that up for you individually? Like, how have you gone through and learned these new technologies? Is it books? Is it podcasts? Is it other forms of online education?
In terms of learning, no, it's playing and breaking things. It always has been from when I was young, playing with electronics and to looking at different programming paradigms and challenges and through to, you know, the architectural components. For me, typically it's playing with stuff and breaking stuff. In terms of learning.
Yep. Hands-on.
Yep.
Hands-on.
Yeah, probably not a great student.
No, everyone learns differently, right? So completely, there's no right and wrong answer to that. I think there is. The right answer is what works for you,
yep.
Right? There's no point sitting through a university degree if you don't learn in that fashion. If you learn in that fashion and you're not that practical, hands-on, break-it type person, well, then that's for you, right?
Yep.
Mate, we'll wrap it up real quick, but if we go down to day-to-day, if you had to give a productivity tool or tools that you use on a day-in, day-out basis to help manage your day, to help you be an effective CTO, is there a tool or tools?
Slack's still one of my favorite tools. I hate email. Email's surely email's dead yet. We do use Jira and Trello are great. Todoist is a good tool for task management. I'm probably not a particularly tool focused person.
You mentioned three there though. If they're being used, legitimately through the business, they are really good cornerstones.
Hmm. Biggest tool for me for productivity is a password manager.
Yeah, right.
LastPass or 1Password, something like that. None of this, same password thing for everyone or, using a single password. Make sure the passwords are, privacy is a massive thing and security is a big sort of bugbear of mine. So.
And growing.
Yeah.
And growing. From an educational perspective, do you listen to podcasts, read books?
Yeah. Yes to both.
Any favorites you would like to share with anyone?
Yeah, so podcasts for me. At the moment, I'm actually listening to a podcast called Exponent. I also love the Planet Money podcasts some of the Freakonomics stuff.
What's Exponent about?
Exponent is just two guys talking about the world in technology and strategy and economics. It's a really interesting dynamic. One of the guys is an Australian living in Silicon Valley and the other is a Yank living in Taiwan, I believe. They have some interesting discussions where they sort of push and prod each other to dive into topical matters, whether it's around Apple's WWDC when that's on, or and different announcements there, or different mergers and acquisitions and thoughts. It's a sort of business strategy type podcast. Quite interesting.
Very nice. I'm always interested in podcasts and books that people read outside of pure tech or outside of what they do, because I think, as you said before, as we started this podcast out, there's such a overlap or integration work and life that it's really hard to have that separation. So the educational or things you do for enjoyment, they find a way to influence your work, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And books, probably the two most recent books I've really enjoyed have been Predictably Irrational by Dan Ariely, I think it is, and The Culture Code is a really good book.
Very nice.
That'd Very be nice. My two picks recently.
Awesome. Mate, if people are keen to have a chat with you, to learn anything from you, you're obviously available on the new Slack channel.
Yes.
Outside of that, anywhere else, easiest way to get in contact with you?
People can always hook up on LinkedIn. I do try and get to sort of startup events and meetups and things, although do a a worse job of getting to those than I used to.
As do I.
Yeah, but yeah, the new East Stack Channel is a great way to start. I mean, it's a great resource that I think is we're fortunate enough to have because of the size of Newcastle. It's big enough for it to be something, but Newcastle's still small enough for it to not be overcrowded. And you know, like the Sydney Startup Facebook group, for instance.
Agreed.
It's just I think that that new East Lake Channel is a great place.
Agreed, mate. Mate, thank you for your time.
No worries. Thank you. Thanks, mate.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Nui Tech People. We're currently at final stages of the new Nui Tech People website, so stay tuned for updates very soon on www.nuitechpeople.com.au. Have a great day.